Grand freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Huard. And Brooke Huard.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
It's taken me 157 games, Brock. 157 games. But I have finally realized that it is the venerable Mark Twain who best described this Mariner team.
Oh.
When in doubt, go Mark Twain. You might not even know that this quote is from Mark Twain or who he was originally talking about, because I've heard it used to discuss Seattle or Alaska or other various spots. But I feel like Mark Twain got it right about these Mariners when he said about New England, if you don't like the weather now, just wait 5 minutes.
Sure.
Because nothing could describe this Mariner team better than that. They are like the weather. Whatever you think of them, just give them a few games and they'll change your mind. If you think they stink, just wait. They'll go out and score six runs, force the Astros to make a whole bunch of mistakes, play clean, and get unbelievable pitching. You think they're great? Just wait. They'll go into Texas and get themselves swept in a way that will make you want to kick a pet. Just wait 5 minutes, and this Mariner team will absolutely do whatever it is you think they aren't going to do.
And then sit through a game like last night, as you said, where you got on top of them. You finally got a lead on somebody. Kirby was tremendous. We see something we've never seen in the history of baseball, at least for me, since the movie Rookie of the Year, where a fan throws a ball back on the field.
Yeah, right in the stomach.
Oh, gosh. That was just absolutely wild. I don't know. Were you like me? I couldn't sleep last night. I mean, it was 3 a.m. I'm still like wide awake. Like, you know, just all of that energy of watching that game, even though you got the lead, and oh my gosh.
Well, because that was the first game, Brock, that actually looked like a late season playoff style game.
Yep.
Like, okay, you got a lead and it's tight and you're going to brash and all the decisions, should he take him out in the seventh or the sixth? All of those decisions were playoff kind of baseball that I thought we would have been getting for the last five.
Yep.
But instead, we didn't get it until yesterday.
Nope. Nope. Well, that's good for my sleep. That's helpful, because I didn't even think I was that wound up. I mean, I didn't even think I was that wired. I mean, I didn't get into a horse dance. I didn't pound my chest. I didn't do any of that. And you know what? You're welcome. You're welcome. Because as you can tell, even after a Tuesday night football practice and a Mariner playoff game, the voice is great. I purposely didn't yell at Liam last night. Are my guys hitting up front? Oh, no. Is anybody sticking their face in the fan? Absolutely not. Are we making music with our pads? Oh, no. And do we play the best team yet this weekend to get slaughtered?
I'm sorry.
Yes, we do. But you know what? I thought of you. I'm like, I'm not doing it. I'm not yelling. I'm not screaming. I'm not going to lose my voice during the Mariners game. I'm going to keep my cool. I'm going to send largely positive text to Salk. But, you know, with some opinions, because that's what I do. I'm an opinionist.
You're an opinion guy.
And then, you know, I started doing some football work, and then I looked at the clock. It was 3 a.m, and I was still wired. That's what this week should do. That's what playoff baseball should do. That's what, when the Mariners can play to, as you said, play to their ceiling, play to who they're capable of, they can beat anybody. They can beat anybody in this league any given night against any opponent. And last night they did at just the right time to avoid that five-game losing streak. So I think they're going to end the whole season without ever a five-game loser, no matter what happens.
Right.
I'm confident of that.
They got to win one more game.
If they can win one more game,
they will never have lost more than four games in a row this year,
which is pretty
shocking.
It is.
Right? Considering the ups and downs that they've had. All right. Let me take it back, Brock. You don't like the weather? Wait five games. Because within five games, they will show you something completely different. What a strange, bizarre season. But that's what Mariner baseball is supposed to look like. It is supposed to be, you know, great starting pitching. I played it earlier. Goldsmith nailed it. This is a run prevention team. Brash was filthy. Kirby was tremendous. Changed up his style a little bit last night. Went much more sinker slider early, which was great to see. It's a really good baseball game, honestly, and that's what the Mariners need to do in order to win. So now you get back to it tonight. So, all right, I had one other thing. As I said, we don't have a lot of time today.
Okay, but can you just believe how dirty the Mariners are?
Plunking how dirty they
like
are?
That? Oh, yeah. Those Astros. Can you believe you just intentionally hit two guys last night again?
I would have. I absolutely thought that they intentionally hit McCormick late. I was like, yep. Peg that, dude. They're still mad about the Ty France thing, which was filthy and disgusting and unnecessary. And they were just, five-run lead in the ninth. We may not get a chance to see you again. Bang.
98 in the back.
Here's 98 right in the middle of your kidney. What's up?
Sorry to distract
you. Like Jay Buhner just punched him in the kidney. That's right. Drill that dude.
We don't have much time. Sorry. What do you got for me?
Well, I mentioned this earlier, but I just wanted to hear your reaction to it. And we don't have a lot of time today. We got KJ, et cetera.
Oh,
so I went yesterday to Cecily's cross-country meet.
Oh, yeah.
In the rain. Great time.
Oh, gorgeous. Mud puddles
just
everywhere.
Just beautiful.
Gore-Tex out in September. Park. Yeah, it's awesome.
Brought Bruin with me, which was awesome. She's a blast. Love Bruin. So much better. So much more friendly the more. Like, I get home yesterday, Bruin's jumping up and down. She's so excited to see me. I'm like, yeah. I come in the morning, Maura glares at me. So that's great. Anyway. I overhear, Brock, a coach of one of the other teams. This is fourth through eighth grade kids. And this team was mostly slightly older kids, middle school.
Okay.
Pump up speech to the kids before the race in the rain. Not even raining that hard, just wet, but just sort of drizzly and wet.
Hey, middle school cross country.
It's super wet out there. Don't try to be a hero. Be careful. And I got a text from somebody earlier saying, hey, in cross country, sometimes the kids want to race out really fast. It wasn't that. Trust me. I listened to the conversation. It wasn't pace yourself so that you have something left at the end. It was make sure you don't trip and fall. I don't want anybody getting hurt out here. This is the Pacific Northwest and it's raining and you're doing cross country. Don't be a hero out there.
Well, this wasn't like it was the state tournament, right?
No, it's like second meet of the year.
Yeah,
but still,
that's okay to say, isn't it?
Stop it, Justin. Hey, whatever you do, don't try to win this race.
Don't try too hard.
Hey, I don't want to see anybody out there trying too hard. Don't win the race. I don't want to see anybody. Don't get tired. Whatever you do, everybody just stay safe out there.
I want to have a little grace in case that person's listening to the show right now. You just never know.
I'm going to bet.
You never know.
Everything I own that's not the case.
Okay.
Bet the house.
Bet the house, bet the wife, bet the kids, bet your husband. I don't think that's going to happen.
But that makes me puke.
Isn't that awful?
That's just.
I got to tell you, that one really got to me. I was like, oh, come on.
I'd vomit.
Yeah. Thanks, Jay. Jay's absolutely right. Like, what?
Don't be a hero.
I don't want anybody being a hero out there.
Not time to give it our all.
If only Pete had said that two Saturday nights ago before the first game against the Rams, maybe the team wouldn't have been so excited and so pumped up Saturday. They would have still had some juice left for Sunday. If only Pete had reminded them not to be a hero and not to try too hard out there to try to win a game. Just think about how much better the Seahawks could have done in week one. We'll be right back with everything you need to know. It's Brock and Salk.
That's vomit.
710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, it was a much better game last night for the Mariners, obviously. I thought they showed a much better eye at the plate. Their BABIP luck finally went in their favor. And they got some good old-fashioned starting pitching, the thing that had been missing in a few of the previous games. That's what it's supposed to look like. And we saw it for the first time in at least or nearly a week. The offense was great. They needed it. They chased Javier in the fifth. They took pitches. They found ways to force the Astros to make mistakes. And then it was the late, great Ty France with the final word.
Stanek delivers. Swing and a well-hit ball deep into the gap in left center by Ty. This one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Ty France into the pen in left center field. His 11th home run of the year. Trots around the bases with the Mariners' 6th run of the night. It's now the Mariners' 6 and the Astros 1.
Yeah, it felt like it was just a tack-on run late, but you know what? It meant that when Alvarez came up in the ninth, his run didn't matter.
Yeah.
That was a huge benefit to all of our psyches, no?
You know I love the number 7, right? I mean, you know I love that. I mean, the other one is 40, right? 40 years, 40 days tempted was Jesus. 40 years were the Israelites in the wilderness.
Sure were.
Over 40 games.
The desert, really.
Sorry. Over 40 games for Ty France without a home run.
Yeah.
And last night, he gets it. And I can't imagine how good that must have felt for him to get to that dugout and have those seeds hit his face.
Right.
Right, and get to hold the...
That's what the Trident feels like.
Yeah. Oh, this thing is heavy. It's been a little while. I'll tell you, all of that was great. You know what my favorite play of the game was? My favorite play of the game. My favorite play was something you would not have seen 2 months ago. You would have not have seen 4 months ago.
Pitch from George. Altuve, not much of a lead. Pitch.
Swing on, popped up into right field. Actually, it's got some carry. Things really going back. Tail up against the wall. Bangs into the wall. Makes the catch. What a fabulous play. Teoscar Hernandez did not give up.
That was awesome. He hadn't made that play all year. And it's not a slide on Teo. He's not like an A-plus defender. That's fine. But, dude, he got a beat on it, yep. And he knew. Well, you want to talk about culture, and you want to talk about guys playing through injury. You want to talk about guys laying on the line. He knew right then what he was doing. Oof. I'm about to go have a little car accident. I'm about to run full speed right into this wall. And, you know, kind of like we used to do at the Puyallup Fair with bumper cars. Like, here it comes. Here it comes. I know there's going to be a collision. And to hold on to the ball, that was a big-time play.
Yeah, pretty darn cool. It's nice to see Cal throw out yet another runner. But the story yesterday was George Kirby. He was phenomenal. Pitched really well. Six innings, shutout ball.
I love it. Big games. I always want the ball. And I love pitching against the Astros. And, you know, it always fires you up a little more. I love it.
He seemed pretty darn fired up. I was saying to Justin earlier, he and Kelnick definitely have a similar pattern and kind of speak the same way. I thought he pitched a whale of a game yesterday, and the ability to adjust and instead of going four-seamer, go sinker slider yesterday, pretty impressive. Oh, you don't want to,
Well, I do. Did you listen to Pedro after the game?
No.
I know you love Pedro.
Why was Pedro? What do you mean?
No, because it was on I was watching some of the TBS copies.
Oh, I don't get TBS.
See the national. Oh, you don't? Oh, yeah. So it's kind of fun to hear others speak about it. Ron Darling and crew, I'm flipping back and forth. And Pedro afterwards was interesting because they set him up. What do you think? And he's like, his stuff. I love his stuff. His body language sometimes bothers me, you know, like with his defender, sometimes his body language really bothers me. And, you know, that's going to be a bit of, I think, a work in progress. But the stuff, filthy.
Well, and I think that what happened a couple weeks ago may have sort of hopefully been a bit of a catalyst there. They get a little help elsewhere. Blue Jays, Rangers both lose. So you come in tonight, Brock, and everything is still on the table for you, as unlikely as it seemed just 24 hours ago.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Seahawks getting healthier. Giants, maybe they could get Saquon Barkley back. He's going to try to participate in some walkthroughs this week. I don't know if he can be effective as recently as he hurt that ankle, but we'll wait and find out. And then with the Giants, taking on the Giants this week, I just found myself looking at the Daniel Jones, Geno Smith comp since they both got paid this offseason. Let's remember, Geno got 3 years, 105, 27 guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Jones got 4 years, 160, 82 million guaranteed. Geno's got a quarterback rating of 98, right where he was last year. Jones, 70 with four picks so far.
Yeah.
What am I missing on Daniel Jones?
What you're missing there is even that 3 years, 102 is a year by year by year obligation that Geno committed to. A prove-it deal year by year.
Well, I know all the benefits to Geno.
Yes.
Other than being 26, what's the benefit to Daniel Jones?
Well, they went to the playoffs. They had a great year last year. Yeah.
Oh, well, then, by all means, just give that guy a whole boatload more money. Sheesh.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, Brock, let me take you back in time to July. This was Phil Steele on the station, asked about Michael Penix's Heisman candidacy.
And I would list him as a potential Heisman candidate. You look at the Washington schedule this year, there's a chance they could open up 8-0 before they travel to face USC. And if they go into USC and win that game head-to-head with Caleb Williams, all of a sudden you would make Michael Penix your Heisman favorite at that point.
Mm-mm-mm. Does he need to go 8-0 in order to be a Heisman
favorite? I think so. Yep. Based on what Bo Nix is doing right down the road as well, he's been absolutely phenomenal. Based on what Caleb Williams continues to do and just, you know, the national spotlight that takes a little bit longer to shine all the way to the gloomy, dark, rainy Pacific Northwest at times. So, I think that is reasonable. And this weekend's pretty big. I mean, SC's got to go to Colorado, and USC's defense is terrible. I mean, USC's defense is not as good as Washington's defense, and that is a big bonus in this conversation. So USC had their hands full at ASU last weekend. Got to play a 9 a.m. on their body clock game in Boulder, which will be packed and jacked, and they will score a bunch of points. And Penix's got to go down the desert. Mm-hmm. And the desert in Tucson has not been friendly to the Huskies for a lot of years. Kind of a sleepy trip down there, and Arizona's got a lot more talent than they've had in the past. They're 3-1. So
who's coaching Arizona now?
Jed Fish.
Oh yeah,
Jed Fish down there.
Oh, Jed the Fish.
Jed the Love Fish.
It. All right, there you go. That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on Brock and Salk. I always think that because there was a DJ in L.A. named Jed the Fish, something like that.
Oh really?
He did afternoons on K-Rock in L.A. for a long time. And when I used to drive home from Burbank to Venice, which was like 2.5 hour commute, I would listen to a lot of the radio. So
that's Jed.
Jed the Fish, right? Yeah. Isn't that his name?
Yep.
Yeah, Jed the Fish. So whenever I hear Jed Fish, I always think about that.
Nice.
I don't know what he's doing now. I don't know if he's still on the air or whatever, but I did used to listen to him. Shout out Jed.
There forever.
Jed the Fish? Yeah. He was a K-Rock for a very long
time. So how did the cross-country meet go? Other than the cup,
it was really great. Yeah. Here's what's great about being a cross-country viewer in the rain is everybody kind of stands around.
Uh-huh.
The kids all start running.
Right.
And then they disappear.
Yeah, yeah.
And like... They were running.
Did you find yourself running on the course? Did you go to different markers?
They had three laps. No. They were just doing half mile laps. They did three half mile laps. So you stand there.
Oh.
And you can kind of see them like way off in the distance.
You didn't have your binos?
I was going to ask the same question.
I did not.
Oh.
I hadn't thought ahead enough.
Nah, you'll
I didn't
learn
know the
things.
Course, I nah, guess.
You'll learn.
This is
you'll
only,
learn
this is only my first that I've
Get
been
one of those
to.
Drones as a Bluetooth tracker to follow her around on the
Yeah,
on the
and like, you know, six, 7 minutes later, they come running by looking miserable, right?
So when a coach on the other side says, don't be a hero, does part of you at that point like want to walk away, but within earshot be like, take no prisoners.
No,
you know, just to try.
I don't
to
have
totally,
that desire.
There's
no.
none of that in
a
you.
A lot of people, a couple of people texting and saying, "Kid, you got to tell young kids not to be a hero so that they don't run too hard at the beginning." This wasn't that. Trust me, there was more.
Maybe
to
they
it.
Made the beginning of the season.
I
you
heard.
Said this was the second
I heard
meet.
The whole thing. Like that's just sort of the highlight of it. I'm telling you, I'm giving you the high level 30,000 foot. This was not. Hey, pace yourself till the end.
Yeah.
This was, don't run too fast. I don't want anybody getting hurt out there in the rain. And I'm sorry, man. I don't get it. A lot of people suggesting that maybe Teo didn't get that speech before the game last night, which is why he was willing to run into that wall. Okay, coming up next, Brock, some of the best sound I think we've ever heard. An unbelievable look into the mind of a leader and a huge question mark all of the sudden about something I think I'd been taking for granted. It's next on Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
You're listening to Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
I'm going to play you some sound here that I don't know how anybody wouldn't love to hear. This is what you're hoping your leader sounds like. This is the epitome of some of the things we've discussed with Geno Smith, being a thumb guy, taking responsibility, being genuine, but it also has sort of a dark tail, unfortunately. So let me play this for you. This came from Inside the NFL, and they had Geno mic'd up during the game on Sunday. And in the second half, he goes over to Jackson Smith and Jigba, who doesn't look as happy as maybe he should be, given how the game is going, et cetera. He looks a little out of sorts, let's say, on the sideline. And so Geno comes over to him, and here's 16 seconds of that audio.
Hey, I need you. I need you in the second half. I need you locked in. Hey, look, whatever happened, it's on me. It ain't never on you. And you got to get the ball, so I got to find you, all right? But I need you to give me your best this second half, all right? Come on.
All right, so that's awesome.
Wow.
Right?
That's so cool. Yeah, that was in the first half, right? So he's talking about
near
hey,
the
he's...
end of the first half,
correct.
Right? Or was it right after halftime?
I know. I think it was right at the end of the first half, and it was after the interception. And so I looked at that and listened to that a few different times, trying to understand the context of that. Like, where did that come from? And it was after the interception that he tried to force into Jackson. Mm. And it wasn't too dissimilar to the first play of the UCLA-Utah game. The only thing there is Kerenne Reed, the linebacker, got a little better jump and pick sixed it all the way to the house. It's a concept that is in sixth grade football. It's double slant. So we're going to run double slant. Pretty good concept. You'd read it inside out. It's pretty good versus man. You could throw it versus zone in different windows. And you've got to trust that your receiver, if you misread it, if he has a chance to collision the defender or cut across the defender, you hope that he can do that. That's a critical error by Geno. He should not have thrown it, right? He threw it right into the coverage. I'm going to guess that Jackson got some heat, maybe from position coach or coordinator, probably not Shane, probably position coach of like, hey, man, you got to go across that guy's face. Like you can't let that ball be picked off. You got to do whatever you can do on your end, even on a bad read or bad decision. Like in this league, bro, like you've got to help your quarterback. You have got to make contact. You've got to, you know, you got to be tail, and you got to run right into a car accident sometimes. So I'm going to guess that maybe he took some of that and was sitting on the bench like, man, this ain't going good. This ain't what I signed up for, Salk. I had like 6,000 receiving yards in the state of Texas. I was the most prolific. I broke state records in the state of Texas. I went to Ohio State. You remember what I did in September?
Yeah, we'll get to him. Like, we'll get to the JSN portion of this because I think there's a separate conversation there.
Yep.
But just stay with me on the Geno part first because...
So good.
It's unbelievable.
So good.
It's so genuine, right? I just... I don't know. He sounds genuine. He's taking responsibility. He's playing psychologist, motivator, reading his guys and figuring out what they need at each time. Yep. When we spent the time talking a couple weeks ago after the first loss about do you get more out of your players? Do you get the most out of the guys around you? Isn't this kind of what that looks like?
And more importantly, like genuinely sounds like. Play it again for me one more time. Now that you know the context, that maybe Jackson could have broken up. Maybe he could have crossed that guy's face. Maybe he could have tried to knock it down. So knowing that was the play, listen again to Geno's commentary.
Hey, I need you. Need you in the second half. Need you locked in. Hey, look, whatever happened, it's on me. It ain't never on you. And you got to get the ball, so I got to find you, all right? But I need you to give me your best this second half, all right? Come on.
That's pretty good. Peyton used to say, once that ball leaves my hand, I sign the check. It doesn't matter what happens. Like it bounces off a receiver's hands. It's an interception. Guess whose record that goes on? Guess whose checking account it's on? It's not on the receiver. It's an interception. That's on me. Like I throw into coverage and that's on me. You know, I throw and misread it. That's on me. I make the right read and a guy jumps on it. That's on me. I throw it and the receiver doesn't cut in front of the face of a defender for whatever reason. And I'm not saying in that case to me, that was like, ooh, I don't think Jackson deserves really any criticism on that. That one you just can't throw. And it would have been miraculous for Jackson in any way to knock it down. But Geno takes full thumb responsibility. That's on me.
Good.
And as you said, not in a phony way. Not in any, oh, I'm the QB, so I'm supposed to say it's on me. That was as authentic as it gets right there.
So, unfortunately, I got to ask the other side of this question. What is going on with Jackson Smith and Jigman?
But do you?
I mean, I kind of have to ask. I'm not saying that the answer has to be terrible, but the production hasn't been what we expect, right? You brought up yesterday how Bobo may even take some reps there and just sort of his blocking and some of the stuff he's
just
done.
Just because of what he does as a blocker.
Understood.
When he comes in motion and he's doing this,
I want to be very clear as we have this conversation. I'm not concerned yet in any way about Jackson Smith and Jigba, who I think the world of. And I wouldn't have, honestly, this wouldn't have even dawned on me to bring up were it not for this audio, because let's look at the, you know, what we've seen so far. The production has not been significant.
No.
In game one, we had the shot of him just sort of looking out into space where everyone was like that, right? Geno looked like that and Lockett was on the oxygen machine. And we're like, man, this whole team just looks like they have spaced out. But he was unfortunately one of the guys who was shown on TV during that time. So that's one of the images I have. And now I have Geno kind of coming over to him to let him know that he's still going to need him, which kind of leads me to believe that Jackson was sort of off on an island for a little while, that he was not in the best headspace because of how things were going on the field. So I love this kid. I love everything I've heard about him. I love everything I've learned about him behind the scenes. I met his dad. I liked him. Like, I'm all in on Jackson Smith and Jigba, but I don't have to at least note that that's not spectacular. And in the meantime, Zay Flowers has 21 catches for 188 yards in what is generally conceived to be a rushing offense.
Yeah.
Those things are relevant.
Yep. 9 receptions, 57 yards for Jackson. No touchdowns. No big plays. Right? No wow moment yet. No, you know, over the middle and between three guys. No juking somebody out of their shoes. No what we saw all through OTAs and training camp, where day after day, week after week, you couldn't, you know, see any highlights of practice and not see Jackson front and center of it. So we have not seen him get loose at all. And as I said to you, for the first time, an incredible athlete Well, that's not fair. Last year he was injured. He had the hamstrings. So last year he went through a significant valley, but that was all injury related. This is just right now performance, right? This is like, hey man, DK's doing his thing. He's scoring touchdowns. Tyler's doing his thing. He's scoring touchdowns. Even this Jake Bobo guy is coming in. He's blocking. He's scoring a touchdown. He's kind of carving out a role. Where's my role? Like, what am I doing? You know, that's kind of how I see this.
Right.
And to be honest with you, three games in, and you're not saying this. I mean, it's three games. You just said it beautifully. Like, I'm all in on this guy.
I love him.
But three games in, yeah, I think he's searching to find that role. And how do I fit? And fortunately for him, he's got a veteran quarterback that understands, hey, bro, second half, I'm going to find you.
Yeah.
Second half of the season, we're going to need you. Tyler and DK are going to miss some time. You're going to get a game where you're going to get fed 7-8. There's going to be a matchup where you're going to be a beast and have a 100-yard day, but you have got to keep your head in it. You got to stay with me here because this is a different level.
Yeah.
This is Michigan. This is Michigan every week.
That, right? Like, just this is a learning lesson for a young kid who's new in the league and just starting to figure this out. And I don't need him to be a superstar in game three and understand how to do it all. I am very much here for him learning and growing, et cetera. I also understand that the road that you chose not to travel, you're always going to be judged against in this league. I don't want to be in the business of comparing Devin Witherspoon to Jalen Carter, but guess what? I have to.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's like, it's actually written into my contract. It's actually written in. You don't know that, Brock. I've never shown you my contract.
He showed me, though. He showed me.
Yeah. Justin, how about this? Back-to-back days. He's telling us things he's never...
It's in my contract. And you may not realize, there's a little provision. You can go upstairs and ask Kathy about it. There's a little provision in my contract that says, if the Seahawks draft, say, a cornerback with the number 5 pick and pass on a defensive lineman, you have to then follow the career of that defensive lineman and complain anytime he does anything positive.
Brock, we don't make
even
the rules.
If your guy is good.
Right.
Salk just follows it.
I didn't even want to sign this. I told her I wasn't going to sign the contract until she took the provision out.
Right.
And she's like, look, I'm sorry. We're trying to run a radio station here.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Like, do you want to do your job or not? And I was like, okay, fine. I want to work. Like, okay, fine. I'll sign the darn contract. So I signed it, and now I'm actually legally obligated to bring up Jalen Carter every couple of days.
And now Zay Flowers.
And Zay Flowers, that one's not in the contract, but it was actually put in later as a writer.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, it's a special appendix.
You do realize there's people listening that believe what you're saying.
That's good. They should tell you the truth.
That. All right.
Would I lie to you about my contract?
Yes.
Would I take Kathy's name and smear it here on the radio? I would never do that to Kathy. She is one of the greats. She's one of my favorite people. And the fact that she put this into my contract is nothing but fact.
I wish you weren't a liar.
Here's the other facts, Brock. Through three games, what did you say JSN's numbers were?
9 for 57, no touchdowns.
And Zay Flowers, 21 for 188.
Yeah, he doesn't have Tyler and he didn't have DK.
He doesn't have tight ends. All those things are true.
He didn't have any of those other pieces.
I know, but he's looked really good.
Yep, that's fine.
And that's something that you're going to comp.
Yep.
And guess what? Devin Witherspoon has played in two games and looked pretty good.
Yep.
He looked pretty good last week, which is great. Most quarterback pressures this season amongst defensive tackles. Do you know the top three?
I'm going to guess Jalen Carter's on the medal stand if you're
number one.
Spouting this.
Javon Hargrave, available this offseason.
Uh-huh.
18 pressures in three games from the defensive tackle spot.
Where's he at, San Fran?
San Francisco.
Okay, all right.
Number two is a tie. We have 15 between the Bills, Ed Oliver.
Yep.
And the Eagles, Jalen Carter.
Nice. Good for Jalen.
By the way, did you see the play he made Monday night coming back to the ball after it was already down the field? Oh, yeah, you didn't care. Because the big knock on Jalen Carter is it doesn't play hard, he doesn't care, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But it's a hustle play coming back to the ball that he made in order to force the
ball. No, the big knock on Jalen Carter is at some point it's going to implode.
Well, no, but the biggest knock was I'm afraid he's not going to play hard out on the field. That he got fat, that he's not going to be good. That was the biggest knock. And at least through three games, very, very early. But hey, what do you want me to do? I'm legally required to bring this up. I don't want to.
Right.
Kathy's actually in the other room. She keeps somebody around.
To stay compliant.
It's a compliance officer. It's like that guy in Billions who they have who like comes in to like make sure that they're keeping up with all of the SEC rules and regulations. I don't write this stuff. Right. I just have to sign it.
Right. Do you have a little worry for Jackson this year? You have a little like, hey man, is there enough dynamics juice here? Is there enough?
No.
I know the another wrist.
I have zero worry.
Zero.
Yes.
I'd like to see the urgency crank up. That is, I think, the one thing that I would like to see. And I'm going to guess maybe part of the reason that he was sitting over there and Gino did have to give him that little pick-me-up is they've been getting on him a little bit. Come on now. This is a different speed. This isn't Purdue and Indiana and Rutgers. Every week, this is Michigan. Every week, this is elite dudes, no matter who you're playing in this league. And just the sense of urgency has got to be at 100. Not the professionalism, which is there. Not the talent, which is there. And it's going to shine. Mm. But I think just that speed and urgency in this league has got to be ramped at 100 on every single snap. And that, for young guys, is still something to learn, and I think he's learning on the fly.
Yeah, a lot of people worried I'm not going to be here after today, or maybe excited about that fact. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Hopefully the compliance officer is not around, but I feel like I've done my job. I did what I was asked to do. Yep. I talked about the two comps. Something tells me it won't be the last time.
I'm going to do my job before Blue 88.
Before. I was ready to go to Blue 88.
In 8 minutes. Yes. So I'm going to finish. Or I'm going to go a little tempo here because I do have to ask you a unbelievably pressing question.
With KJ?
Not with KJ. No.
Before KJ. Oh, so let's get to Blue 88 right now.
Question.
All right, so Blue 88 right now.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Brock, if indeed Saquon Barkley can go on Monday night, how different is that game?
Well, this is, you know, you asked earlier about Daniel Jones. And the contract, and part of the reason they gave him that contract, because he can run. And at his age, there's still some years, right? This isn't a 34-year-old, quarterback. This is a 26-year-old quarterback that can run. I mean, Daniel Jones, a 4'5", 4'6 guy. And what you saw last year with the Giants, not too dissimilar to Russell early in his career with that 1-2 punch of that run game with Marshawn. I'm not even talking zone read. I'm just talking about, hey, man, if you feel those guys collapse, you feel the backside support, you know, pull it and go get you 12, go get you 15, go get you 25, right? And just the threat and the balance that provided. So Daniel Jones is not going to overwhelm you with his arm and his accuracy and the decision-making there, but it is his playmaking with his legs. And when you have Saquon and Daniel Jones, you got a 1-2 punch that will be, at least at this point of the season, I think the most challenging run game the Seahawks have faced. Once they knocked Montgomery out of the game in Detroit, that just stifled some of what they could do. Carolina's not a good running team. The Rams are a work in progress. Good scheme, but not a dominant front either. So, yeah, this will be their best rush defense test, and it's really the peanut butter and jelly, right? They both need each other. Saquon needs Daniel Jones because without Daniel Jones' legs early, it wasn't as prolific. Daniel Jones needs Saquon so he can run off of that, so he can play action off of that, so he can do the rest of the things that's within his skill set. So, yeah, pretty imperative that they have that kind of difference maker with Daniel Jones.
All right, question number two. I saw the numbers you sent over about Colorado and just the amount of eyeballs that have been watching their games. Is that sustainable? Is that going to last all year?
Well, I think it's going to last one more weekend because the old conference told USC you're going to play at 9 a.m. on your body clock. So you're going to play in the big noon window, this 10 a.m. Mountain Time kickoff, USC, Colorado, totally jacked house. As long as they are relevant, as long as they can surprise.
And they're going to play a game at 10 a.m. Colorado, like local time?
9 a.m. Pacific time.
But 10 a.m. local time in Colorado?
10 a.m. local time.
What? That's crazy. Yes. Why? Yes. That's a thing?
Well, the big noon kickoff, Fox, is this was a few years ago.
You should take off that hat, Brock. That's absurd.
It was a pretty brilliant move by Fox to come into college football and say, how can we carve out our niche? Where can we find our eyeballs? If we go head to head with the SEC on CBS,
right,
if we go head to head with ABC Prime, what are we doing? Why don't we put our best game in this big noon window? Now, the benefit is for a lot of years, Michigan,
right,
Ohio State, right? You could put that noon Eastern time kick and it's fine. Penn State, But if you're most relevant or the biggest amount of eyeballs is out west, can you convince them to play at 9 a.m. local?
I don't like that. That doesn't seem right.
Well, there'll be a lot of eyeballs, and my guess will be about 8 or 9 million. And if the game is interesting and Deion keeps it interesting, yes, he will continue. And by the way, the lead that he has gained right now with 10 million after 10 million after 8 million, no program has been watched as much in college football as Colorado. He's got quite a lead on that.
Yeah.
Just stay relevant. Just find a way to get to a bowl. Just find a way to keep, you know, in the headlines. And yeah, they will continue to find a lot of people watching that show.
All right, question number three. So let me give you three names, Brock, two of which we just mentioned, and one more that is here. Seahawks scheme over the course of the next 3 years. You can have one of these three players. Who do you want?
Seahawks scheme?
Yeah, you're the Seahawks. Javon Hargrave, Draymond Jones, Jalen Carter.
Who? Hargrave. Hargrave. I think he's stout, he stops the run, and those numbers are real. Now, again, these you have to put a little asterisk by, or just at least a little context, mm-hmm. too. Who does Hargrave have down in San Francisco next
absolutely.
To
absolutely.
Why did he want to go there? Why did Simeon want to go to Texas? I want to go hit in Texas. I want to be surrounded by those guys in the lineup, and I want to go do damage. I don't want to play up there. I've dealt with
does
Oakland.
Does that stuff happen in the NFL as much? It feels like it doesn't.
Yes.
It does?
Certain positions? 100%. So Bosa and Armstead are going to take up how many blockers?
Right.
So I'm going to have how many on me? Yes. Yeah, even the walruses can think through some of how they're going to eat a little bit. You know, this is a little harder for Dre. A little different situation. Jaren's had a phenomenal start to this season, but he doesn't necessarily have that help. And then we know what Philadelphia has with mm-hmm. Fletcher and others. So, yeah, it's got to add a little context to it. But, yeah, I think for the next two or 3 years.
I guess what's frustrating to me is when I see the Eagles and Niners 1-2 on this list of defensive tackles.
Where's
Jaren
Reed?
Ball.
Isn't Jaren Reed up there?
Well, I mean, he's not in the top four.
I thought he was way up there.
I see 18, 15, 15, and then Jonathan Allen with 14.
Okay.
Maybe he's close to that.
All right.
But that just, I don't know, kind of sticks with me. All right, that's everything. That is today's Blue 88. Excuse me.
Family question
before KJ comes in.
Family question.
Yes.
I know you don't like the Lewis Litt comparison, and it's totally not
it's
fair.
Not very
you're,
nice.
You're not. You're it's a lot
not,
more.
Not very nice at all. By the way, I think I may have stopped watching. I think I'm going back and re-watching Game of Thrones. Uh-huh. And just watching the first two episodes, yep. I already hate Joffrey so much again that I don't know if I can continue. He's right. Such a little rat. I hate him. Like I don't know how that actor will ever get another acting role in his life.
Is that Lewis Litt in that show too? Or
No. He's like the little prince arrogant. Like he's just a little... I can't even talk about him without wanting to curse on the air. He's such a terrible thing.
KJ's with us here in a couple minutes. Okay, you've not seen the scene with Lewis Litt and the cat yet.
Not yet.
You haven't.
No.
So here's a hypothetical.
Yeah.
What happens when Maura comes home, tanned and rested, a great time down there in Cabo and everything else, and she comes to the door and gets
mm-hmm.
Bruin,
mm-hmm.
and Bruin don't want to leave.
Oh, like Bruin's good?
Like Bruin is just like on your hip. He's on your thigh. Like, come on, Bruin. Come on, Bruin. And Bruin's like, mm-mm. And he's just like on your hip, and you know she's like, come on, and maybe he even runs down. I don't know where he's been sleeping.
She.
Where has she been sleeping next to you?
No, she's been in her crate at night. Yeah, she did at some point yesterday find her way up into our bed while we weren't there. Like, what? Okay. Hey, what are you doing in here?
So even better. Like, so this helps the story.
She just bolts up the stairs and gets
in bed. She gets under your covers. She's not leaving.
Right.
And
what happens?
Yeah, what happens?
I don't know. What do you think? Like, I hadn't really considered that as a possibility.
I don't know if that happens.
That doesn't happen. Dogs aren't like that.
I don't know if Maura considered this.
Dogs aren't like that. Now,
cats can be?
Cats are evil. They hate you. A cat would plot your demise if given the opportunity. Dogs are loyal to the very end. Bruin's just a friendly girl. She's great. She's come over. We've had a great time. I love having her at the house. She and Avery have become fast friends.
Right.
She finds little spots
around
the house.
I think she threw up just to see how you'd react and the way you, the patience,
love, we dealt with that, no problem.
The kindness, all of it. I think you've won her over. And I'm just saying, like, if she doesn't want to run to the car, she doesn't.
I got to tell you, here's the one thing I've learned with having Bruin here for the last couple days. This is the biggest thing I've learned because I've only had male dogs my whole life. My parents had two male dogs when I was a kid. Wendell obviously was a boy of sorts. And so I've learned something very interesting to me, caring for a female dog here the last couple of days. When you take them for a walk, they only pee once. It's great. Oh, no, here comes Kathy. After years of walking male dogs and having them mark 37 times every time you walk them anywhere, I go take Bruin out for a walk. She pees as soon as we get outside. We keep walking, and I'm waiting for her to pee. And I'm like, come on, let's go. I'm sure you're going to pee 35 more times. Nothing. She just walks back into the house. She peed when she needed to, and that was it. What a delight. Why did nobody even tell me about this? All right, KJ's in next. We'll get back to the football. It is Brock and Salk. Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.